Welcome to the Adult Autism, A Spectrum of Uniqueness podcast, a podcast series for adults on the autism spectrum or those who think they might be autistic. Here's your host, Chris Quarto.
Hello again, Autism Nation. Thanks again for joining me on the Adult Autism, A Spectrum of Uniqueness podcast. And today, Jessica Pinot has agreed to join us and to talk about some autistic things and a book she has coming out a little later. And we'll talk about that toward the end of the podcast. But Jessica, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Nice to be here.
Well, listen, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm kind of curious, you're a counselor, a licensed professional counselor. Kind of curious just about you and how you got involved in the counseling field.
So I've been a counselor forever now. I'm middle-aged, right? So, I found this on my, I don't know where this came from. My mother sent this to me. Like, I've been doing this since I was like, this is me when I was 20, right? So,
yeah.
So I've been, you know, this is, besides writing, this is really all I've ever wanted to do. And I went straight from grad school into practice, and I was working with rape victims as early as 20 years old. I worked with the Rape Crisis Center doing their advocacy program.
Yeah. You have a passion for helping people.
Yeah. I mean, I love this work. It's wonderful. I've put a lot of thought into it, and I am, you know, I have recently in the last, you know, since I was 40, been diagnosed with autism. And I realized that this is a great field if you're autistic, because it allows you to connect with people, you know, in a very real, genuine way without knowing any social skills to speak of. Yeah. So yeah, it's wonderful. And you can help and you can connect and be part of community and humanity while being on the spectrum.
And, you know, I was looking at your website last week, I think it was, and it was really interesting because I saw that you're a neuroaffirmative therapist, and I haven't seen that phrase used very often. Can you speak about what that means and what kind of clients might be attracted to you in your practice?
So neuroaffirmative is kind of the complete flip-flop from what traditional autism treatment over the last, you know, since, you know, it was initially diagnosed, right? You know, because traditionally we think of like ABA and social skills-based treatments. They're all about teaching your children or, you know, adults to act more normal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, from the get-go, it's about learning social skills, which is always defined as neurotypical social skills. Right. It's, you know, about, you know, learning to hide your stems, learning to behave in a pattern that will make you more palatable for neurotypical society. Yeah. Neuroaffirmative is almost the opposite of that. I always use the book Stella Luna as my template for introducing it. And it's the story of a little baby fruit bat that's raised by birds. And the birds really try to force the baby fruit bat to be a bird, try to eat, you know, force it to eat bugs and perch like a bird and be up all day. And the fruit bat's miserable and it can't do it and it fails at every step. And that would be traditional autism treatment, yeah. Right? Like you can be a bird if you want to. But neuroaffirmative is the, you know, the type of treatment where we accept you're a fruit bat and you learn to live your best life as a fruit bat and accept that you're not going to be a neurotypical, and that's okay. You just have to find a different way to live that makes you happy.
It's really,
does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And I love that Stella Luna, you said was the name of the book.
Yeah.
You know, I attended an autism conference a few weeks ago in Michigan, and it was a great conference. And of course, I was one of the vendors there, and there are other vendors from different agencies in the area. And many of them offer applied behavioral analysis, the ABA services that you were talking about, which traditionally has been, let's try to make this person more neurotypical, as you put it. And I don't know if many of the listeners are aware of this, but there's a real controversy about that approach to therapy. And what you were just talking about is, shouldn't we really be trying to focus more on helping people just kind of be who they are, and instead of trying to force them to be something that they aren't, but yet might be more acceptable, you know, in a neurotypical world?
I mean, autism is this weird thing where it's probably the most researched mental health concern out there, right? But almost all of the research prior to 10 years ago was on children. Mm-hmm. And it was funded by organizations that were trying to get, you know, children to act normal, and so that parents could be happier living with their children, essentially. Right. And not that I actually have three children, so I completely understand that. When you're a parent, when you're a parent and you have kids that's behavior is extremely disruptive, it can destroy, you know, everything about your family's life. So I have a lot of empathy for autism parents. But on the other hand, if you look at the studies we have coming out now that are longitudinal, right, autistic adults have terrible quality of life. Like, yeah, we can get those kids, autistic kids using ABA to fit in to school and to be more palatable for their families and their parents. But then someday we grow up. And when we do, we're miserable. Because the skills that teaches doesn't teach us how to be happy. It teaches us how to be normal. And, you know, suicide rates are tripled for the general autistic population. When you're looking at women with autism, then you have four times the suicide rates. I've seen some numbers that say the average lifespan of most autistic adults is like 58, because the suicide rate is so high. Overall, autistic adults are not happy. They're not thriving. They struggle with career. They struggle with friendships. They struggle throughout their whole life. And neuroaffirmative approaches tend to alleviate this, right? Living an authentic life, finding people like yourself that love you for who you are, as opposed to trying to force yourself to fit into people that don't respect and love you as you are. All those things make life a lot easier. Finding jobs where they'll let you be a little weird and atypical.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Makes it a lot easier.
And I think that, you know, you're bringing up some really good points, and I think this is a good segue into this whole concept of masking. This is a term that's been around for a long time, but I wonder if you could just speak a little bit about what masking is, because I think it kind of relates to your previous point about how, you know, people are kind of, you know, as children who go through ABA are taught to be these typical, you know, normal to exhibit those types of behaviors. And yet maybe that's serving, that's a disservice for some people, at least as they move into adulthood, but maybe they start to mask. And so tell us a little bit about what masking is, why people would mask who they are.
Well, I mean, it's not just about ABA. I mean, like, I wasn't diagnosed until I was an adult, and most women with autism, because of all the stereotypes with autism, women in general are not diagnosed until adulthood, because we don't look like the little boys with autism when we're young. We're much higher masking in general, and we're better at blending in. And we learn very quickly how we're supposed to behave, and we mimic mm-hmm. it, which is essentially what masking is in general. And you know, if you imagine being an autistic child, right, almost everything, I mean, when I was a child, I know almost everything I did was aversive to everyone around me, you know, from the first messages I remember getting when I was a kid is, why are you being so difficult? What's wrong with you? Yeah. Why would anyone do that? That's really weird. Don't do that, right? And everybody, from your parents to your peers to your teachers, is looking at you like you're just kind of a freak of nature. So you very quickly, if you're able, if you're cognitively able, will start watching the kids that are acceptable around you and get positive reinforcement from their behavior and start mimicking it, which is what I did. I struggled with that a lot. It took me years to master masking. Mm-hmm. But once you do, you get positive reinforcement. People aren't telling you you're a weirdo or a freak or making fun of you. Most autistic people are bullied heavily as children. So, you know, you can alleviate some of the tension of the bullying, parents yelling at you all the time. And you pick up these behaviors. But the problem is masking comes with a tremendous amount of anxiety. Because in order for me to successfully mask, for example, when I go out, and I still do it in certain situations because I have to, I have to constantly be watching the people around me. It's like walking on eggshells, right? Watching their faces, trying to figure out what they're thinking. Are they thinking I'm weird? Is this normal? What do normal people do in this situation? Because as an autistic person, you really don't know. So you're like, is this normal? You know, is what I'm saying right now reciprocal conversation? I don't know. I've been talking too long, or have I not been talking enough? And you're constantly weighing these variables, and it's huge anxiety, right? Like, and it's constant to the point where, like, for me, when I was masking at my most, I mean, I would keep all my social interactions down to like 2 hours or less, because after that I would be so exhausted. I couldn't keep up with it.
Sure. Well, that was a good explanation for when you look at it from a childhood perspective, that, there's a lot of negatives that you get, a lot of negative feedback that you get, not only from your peers, but from teachers too, who, because you're not doing things the way that they want you to do them, or how most kids will do these things. And it almost sounds like when you mask, it serves a positive function, because now I'm not getting all these negatives from people. And I can just kind of blend in, and maybe my anxiety goes down a little bit as a result. And so there are some positive things that go along with that. But as you said, at a price, right?
Right. Because you have this huge anxiety that you always have to be on guard, because there's nothing that you're doing that's natural to you. That's why I love the fruit bat analogy, because you are, you're a fruit bat trying to perch like a bird. And it's very uncomfortable for you. But you know that people won't make fun of you or yell at you or be upset with you if you do it. So you do it in any case.
So in your work with adults, do you recommend that they take off the mask? Or is it more situation specific? And I guess one of the other questions I'm really curious to hear about, what are the consequences of taking off the mask? I mean, these are big issues, I would think, that these folks have to contend with.
I mean, every situation's different. I mean, I had the ideal situation, because I went to my mom at some point and I said, hey, a couple people have told me that I seem autistic. And she's like, oh, yeah, probably. And I'm like, okay. You know, so like everybody was like, yeah, you're just really weird. And there was no like kickback, you know, and I work in mental health. So like most people, you know, are supportive and, you know, yeah, that's great. Go on that journey of self-discovery. So, you know, I have the ideal situation where I completely unmasked very quickly. But a lot of my clients don't have that. They have family that will be like, you're not autistic. It's all in your head, you know, and they make it worse on them, or they have jobs where if they unmask at their jobs, they're likely to lose their job. So they have to pick and choose the places it's safe. And I think that's where a neuroaffirmative therapist comes in, because that's where you sit down with your therapist and you try to come up with a plan where you can be as unmasked as much as possible with safe people. But you're choosing the places where you still have to keep it on. And, you know, maybe if you're in a job where you have to mask heavily, or in situations, you know, how can you alter those situations so you have more safe places and less unsafe places, if that makes sense?
It does. And it's so tricky, isn't it? Because on the one hand, many clients who finally get diagnosed want to be more authentic, which I think that you would attempt to do as a neuroaffirmative therapist, is that that would be your inclination, is to help people be more of their authentic selves. But on the other hand, you have all these realistic, you know, like the job, how am I going to get fired if I'm my authentic self? So boy, there are so many things to weigh there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a maze and it's different for everybody. I think most of my clients, their favorite thing has actually been like the support group. We have a support group here. And what they like about it is you get to sit down with other autistic people and see the different paths they've taken in their unmasking process, their stressors. One thing we talk about a lot is meltdown and shutdown and burnout, which sure. kind of dominates our lives because we don't have the same bandwidth as neurotypicals. Yeah. Having other people like yourself you can talk through all this with, and then you can be authentically yourself, helps tremendously.
So in your work, you run these groups for autistic folks. Do you find that they have some unique issues? I mean, besides the whole masking thing, are there other types of issues that they might have to contend with that maybe neurotypical clients might not have to deal with so much?
Oh yeah, I mean, we're completely different, I feel like. I mean, we're not the same at all, and mm-hmm. I think that's why I love the group so much myself too, because you'll sit in there and one person will say, you know how this feels, and everybody else will go, yes we right. do, and we've never had anybody understand before, like, you know, the big sock debate. There's like a group of people that never want to wear shoes or socks because they're horrible and they make your feet feel weird, and then there's a group of people that get upset if they don't have them on at all times. And you know, we can actually, you can talk, because everything that an autistic child has, an autistic adult has, we've just learned how to either hide it or live with it more. So all the same issues that children have, we still have: meltdown, shutdown, sensory issues, sure. overwhelm, hyperfixations. Actually, a lot of groups end up being about hyperfixations. Okay. All those things we still have. We just sometimes are better at hiding them.
It's got to be so validating to be a person, an autistic person amongst autistic clients and an autistic therapist too, knowing that these people in here get me. They understand
yeah.
because yeah. everybody's kind of going through the same thing. And so it sort of helps build that feeling of unity, and it's us. And, you know, that's got to be a great feeling for those, and for you to be able to see that and to help people with that as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's wonderful. And we have a couple other autistic therapists here. So, you know, you never really feel alone mm-hmm. when you're in this community surrounded by people like yourself. And, you know, I'm at a point where I forget how I masked sometimes. Like, I go in and I'm like, okay, I'm going to be normal. I'm going to try to not. And then I'm like, I don't even know what that means anymore. Like, I'm going to try, but. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Let me go back just for a second to the masking, because I had made mention at the beginning of the podcast that you have a book coming out in the fall. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about that. Tell us what the title is, what it's all about, why you wrote it.
It's the Unmasking Autism Workbook, A Guide to Living More Authentically. And I wrote it because there is no accepted treatment manual right now for stuff floating around. You know, you'll see CBT commonly used and mindfulness and, you know, but there's no universally, you know, this is a plan you can follow. And I put it together to kind of set a plan forth with steps that people can follow. And, you know, especially with autism, autistic people like solid plans.
Yes.
So this provides a framework that you can work on, you know, and the beginning of it is heavily laden with self-acceptance, because I think that's the hardest part to get through with autistic adults, because most of us have been told since early childhood that there's something intrinsically wrong with us. Mm-hmm. And the first step is kind of undoing that idea that you're broken and too weird and no one will ever really love you, because in early childhood, those are the messages we get, right? Like, if you act like yourself, you're not going to have any friends. No one's going to like you. No one's going to love you. You know, you're never going to get married. You know, you're weird. Nobody will enjoy you. So the first step in the workbook is undoing those messages, looking for strengths. And then the next step is, I call it excavating yourself. Because if you're a high masker and you've been masking all your life, sometimes you forget who you were and who you are and what you would be like if you weren't trying to just, for most of us, masking is like copying other people's behaviors that we see work out for them. So if I stop copying, like I forgot what food I liked, and I know that sounds weird. To most normal people, but I just went to restaurants and picked the least aversive thing on the menu or cooked for other people and either usually didn't eat because I usually hated everything and just like ate bread rolls a lot and crackers because crackers are always usually readily available and so is bread. You know, so trying to like make a stance that I'm going to try to find food I actually enjoy eating. Right. Was big for me. But you know, for different people, it's different things. You know, what do you want to do? Who are you beneath all the pretending and the trying to fit in and trying to act normal is the next step. And then, you know, there are several chapters on coping with things like sensory aversions, pathological demand avoidance, rejection sensitive dysphoria, meltdown and burnout, because those are huge things.
Sure.
And then into kind of how you can accepting your disability is a chapter. And that's a controversial one because, you know, we don't like to think of autism as a, when you are autistic, as a disability.
Right.
You know, the whole idea of neurodiversity is that our brains are just different. But part of that chapter is accepting that within, since we have to live in a society that doesn't necessarily fit us, it is a disability within that context sometimes, and you might need different helps to make it through. I have a service dog. That's how I accepted that I need help sometimes. He goes out with me almost every place. I don't go to the grocery store. I've accepted that I can't handle the grocery store. It's too much for me. You know, accepting your limitations in the neurotypical world and how you can adapt to that world in a way that you can still thrive is what that chapter is all about, right? Because you may not, the adaptation may be difficult and it's different for everybody. And, you know, I have some clients that are level twos, right? That, you know, they eventually might actually have to apply for disability. Like they have to accept with the way the neurotypical workforce is framed, they will never be able to hold a job,
right?
Which is a hard one. So, and then we kind of go into the end is living the authentic life and integrating all these pieces together.
It sounds like a wonderful book. It sounds very practical, actually, that this is something I could see how the very first chapter on self-acceptance could take quite a long time. I mean, just to kind of, there would be a lot to kind of unpack and kind of look at, you know, what's happened during childhood. And I was told all these things and now I'm going to try to look at myself differently. But boy, all those messages, those tapes we play in our head, boy, those are hard to get rid of.
Yeah, they really are. And that's, I mean, I think I spend sometimes a year just working with some of my autistic adults with, you are not a disaster. You are not a horrible person. You're, you know, wonderful the way you are. And, you know, you have something to offer the world. And you, people will like you. You know, that's another one. People will like you.
Well, and I think part of this is, you know, I look at I can't remember where you're located. Are you in Alabama, Jessica?
Yeah, I'm in Huntsville.
Okay, so you're pretty close to Chattanooga, and Chattanooga has a real interesting community where they have made efforts to make it more neurodiverse friendly. And working with employers and just the community at large to try to be more inclusive. I think that's awesome. And I think that, you know, if more efforts were made like that, where people could just kind of be who they are and be accepted for who they are, not looking at autism as a disability, like you were just saying, just kind of looking at it, you know, as on a, well, if we kind of call it on the spectrum, there are just differences in how people look at things, how they operate. Boy, if we could get to that, that would be wonderful. But I see Chattanooga as one of those communities that's really made a great, great strides in doing that. And it's,
well, and I'm super proud of Huntsville too. I don't know how much you know about Huntsville, right? But we have the Marshall Space Flight Center here, and you know, Research Park, and huge missile defense. So we have, you know, I feel like 50, and I don't know the stats on this, so don't quote me like the gospel, but I feel at least 50 to 60% of our population are physicists or engineers. And I feel like a huge portion of that population is, you know, autistic, you know, or a large, maybe not huge would be an exaggeration, but a large portion. Yeah. And I think when you look at those people, you realize that neurodiversity has a lot to offer our society, right? These are brilliant physicists and engineers who are autistic, and they're thriving. And if we give people a way to use their strengths, I think autistic people can make the world a better place.
Yeah, it's all capitalizing on strengths. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
And well, I don't mean to perpetuate the stereotype that it's all tech fields either. You know, we also here have Low Mill, which is like the largest freestanding independent art facility in the nation, actually. And you can see a lot of the neurodivergence emerging there too in the creative fields, right? And it's amazing what people can do.
Well, to bring this podcast to an end, what are a couple of key points, recommendations that you have for autistic folks who are listening to this podcast?
I mean, I think the key point I always bring is that just because you're different doesn't mean you can't thrive and be wonderful, and there aren't people who will love you and accept you for exactly who you are. You just have to find the right people. And you don't always have to hide yourself and be afraid of being your authentic self.
That's great advice right there.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody has any questions for you, wants to contact you, how can they do that?
I'm pretty easy to find. If you Google Jessica Penot, P-E-N-O-T, I come up in 1,000 different places. Tree of Life Behavioral Health is my private practice. You can always reach out to me through that. I have jessica.penot@gmail.com is my email, and I always answer emails when they come through. I have, I'm trying to think of other places I am. And you can find me on Psychology Today if you Google me, and, you know, all my contact information, because I write for Psychology Today too. I write little blog posts about living an authentic life as an autistic adult.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Jessica, thanks so much for sharing your time with us and words of wisdom. And I hope that the listeners got a lot out of this today. So thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.